Hi, I'm Billy, a developmental pediatrician.
And I'm Nick, a developing parent.
We're going to use scenes from iconic movies to talk about how we best support our kids.
This is Pop Culture Parenting.
Hey, don't let your mother smell that beer on your breath. She'll take it out on me.
I don't want to see you again for the rest of my whole life. I don't want to see anybody else either.
Who is your daddy and what does he do?
Just use your best judgment.
Good evening, Billy. How are you?
Good, Nick. How are you going?
I'm well. Not as cold as I thought I'd be out here today.
Yeah, it's a late evening record.
In the uninsulated shed.
Yes.
It's not a shed. It's nicer than that.
It is. It is nicer. It's a perfect recording studio.
It is. It's quiet. It's dark. I get a little bit scared of the dark, but I don't know.
Well, that came in from some listeners, actually.
It sure did. And we're here for reflective practice for Big Daddy, Adam Sandler, and kids that won't sleep. I think we all know a kid that hasn't slept.
Yeah, lots of parents that aren't sleeping from the feedback we got too.
Ooh, yeah, lots of feedback this week around that. A lot of feedback around basically kids that don't get to sleep and then kids that won't stay asleep. That's what we got a lot of this week, don't you reckon?
Yeah, that was the overwhelming majority. We did have one individual parent. That's instant success, though.
Oh, go on.
Straight after the episode.
Oh,
touch
yeah.
base a couple of days later.
Yes.
Unlocked my potential.
What?
Didn't. Remember there was that one person that said, I've never, now I'm sleeping. Oh. That's amazing.
Yes, there was that person.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing when the magic happens that you just talk about a topic and then they convert it straight into sleeping well?
Billy's referencing me Bradburying three nights of sleep last week. For those of you, the international listeners, I think there's actually quite a few.
Yes.
The States, yeah. Kansas, a few other places.
You don't think they've heard of Bradbury?
Yeah, Stephen Bradbury, who just slid across the line and won gold at the 2004 Olympics.
It happened twice.
Yeah, in the semi and the final. Anyway, so the point is, last week I said I felt like the bloke out of Limitless after three nights sleep. I was predicting the future. I was like, it was just like this.
And I saw you. I saw you at the coffee shop maybe two nights after we'd recorded that episode, and you almost didn't get a morning coffee.
No.
Yeah, you just unlocked your potential.
I didn't need it. Yeah, I had unlocked my potential. Oh, God, I was feeling good. Three nights in a row. It was unbelievable.
It is amazing. It's funny, actually, because I think a lot of kids that we see in clinic that have, which is, you know, up to 80% of the kids with neurodevelopmental concerns, they just think it's normal to just feel tired and exhausted all the time.
Children or parents?
Well, both. But I think parents probably have a little bit more awareness of, like, I shouldn't feel like this all the time.
Yep.
Whereas kids are just, like, irritable and can't concentrate and... Yeah, so
that sounds like you just described me, though.
That's true. Well, yeah, you did say that.
Yeah,
yeah, life was much easier and work was better and everything.
Yeah, I had a great week last week. Off to not such a flyer this week. The episode's not about me and my sleep. This is about everyone else's that contacted us. So we had emails and DMs, and as we touched on at the top, the overwhelming feedback we had was that how do I get my kid to sleep, and then how do I keep them asleep? So those kids that wake up in the middle of the night as well and need to get back to sleep.
Yeah, we did talk about a lot of it was around kind of the start of the night, which is still where the money's at. But
sure,
yeah, I saw a lot of the questions that came in and feedback and thought, yeah, let's go into depth on some of the stuff around that this time.
Yeah, for sure. Do you want to kick us off then with how we're going to tackle keeping kids or getting kids to sleep and then keeping them asleep?
Yeah, definitely. So it's really important when I say this that this is really easy to talk about, but it's really hard to do. For example, you know this because we were texting each other. I spent a proportion of last night in a infant's cot because little Yvette wouldn't sleep, and I was so exhausted from standing over the side and patting her that I just went, you know what? I'm just going to jump in there.
How's your backache? I hate that bend over the cot. God.
Yeah. Yeah, same. So I just went in there, and you know, it's the hardest bit about it is that she like lights up when I'm in there, comes over and is like more affectionate to me than she's ever been in the last year, which is how old she is. And I'm like, God, this is beautiful. And it's being reinforced in me too. I'm like, God, why? I'll just jump in and do this when, you know.
Just do it every time.
Yeah, I'll just do it every time.
And then you end up with one of our listeners, which we'll get to later.
Yeah.
Which is really challenging.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just want to make sure that people realize that there's kind of doing this perfectly and then there's the rest of us. And what I'm talking about is doing it perfectly, but what I want listeners to do is to grab some of the stuff that we talk about and say, actually, I'm going to try that bit.
Yep.
And look at it, and like we're doing this week, like reflect on it and go, cool, we tried that bit. Like we talked last time about bedtime fading and the 20 minutes and things like that, sleep hygiene. The interesting thing about sleep hygiene is the majority of kids that have difficulties will improve with sleep hygiene if it's done correctly and consistently. The problem is it's so hard to do sleep hygiene correctly and consistently.
Sure is.
So that's why so many people get to the point where they're trying other things, including medications. And we see lots of families that ask for medications for sleep.
What sort of medication?
Well, yeah, lots of them. I know some questions came in about melatonin, but we see lots of kids that are on much heavier medications than melatonin because they can't sleep, especially kids with things like, you know, a diagnosis of autism and other things like that where they're really significant problems.
Okay.
But often those kids also have sleep hygiene difficulties. So what we're going to talk about today is what's called CBTI, which is cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia.
Oh, okay. Yep. Makes sense. Go.
I love talking about CBT. And when we do anxiety and treating anxiety, we'll go really deep on CBT because that's where the strongest evidence is because it's the thing that's most researched in kids with anxiety. But it's a really specific pocket of childhood insomnia treatment is CBTI. So that's what we're going to talk about. There's five bits to it and I'm going to break down every bit.
All right.
And you're going to make sure that I'm saying it realistically.
Keep you on track.
And it's just really cool. Some of my colleagues built this evidence, which is really cool. But there's also a group in Germany that did a lot of this work. And I'll mispronounce it. But it's KISS is the acronym of what it's called. But it's like Kinderschlafstörungen.
Yeah.
And it's this really cool program. And one of the best things what they did is – so they do a course that I think it runs for six sessions where they take the parents and the kids. And a lot of listeners last week said, oh, look, that stuff seemed for younger kids. What we're talking about is now is for kids five and up.
Mm.
And we'll do some stuff on adolescence if we have time. And one of the components of their program is that the kids were given this little stuffed toy leopard called Kimbala, which I had to look up. It's an African thumb piano or something like that. But anyway, the Kimbala leopard is really symbolic of positive reinforcement around sleep. So Kimbala the leopard is this little leopard and he has really powerful, strong sleep stuff. And all of his spots are the specific things that kids learn about how to sleep well. And so it's kind of this reinforcer. So it's really cool. And those guys have done some really amazing stuff about converting the evidence into something that parents can learn about.
Okay.
We know like everything we're doing, psychoeducation is one of the strongest things we can do. How do we all understand childhood development and mental health so we can support the kids that are around us? And sleep is the same.
Okay.
So five things, CBTI. First thing is sleep hygiene.
What's that?
We talked about that in great depth, the sleep hygiene stuff we talked about last time. I'll just...
For people that didn't listen to the first episode.
You were in it, but I hopefully got some stuff out of it.
Yeah, I do remember it. I'm just...
Can you give me one sleep hygiene thing?
Sleep hygiene is... Well, it depends what you define as sleep hygiene, but I would have said the low light is sleep hygiene.
Yeah, so room is dark and cool.
Dark and cool. Yeah, cool because temperature rises. Mm. And so don't start it hot because their temperature rises.
You know, there's some evidence about having a bath before you sleep is good because when you come out of the bath, your body temperature drops and it cues you in to that, the same kind of thing around a cool room.
We do that every night. I mean, that's part of it, right? Mm. They come out, wringing wet, put them into bed.
But just the body temp thing dropping can help too. Yep. So the environment.
Yep.
You're the one who started the conversation about routine.
yeah, routine, critical to it. So just like predictable everything. So bath bed, bath book bed in our house, just like so they know it, predictable. Even when you don't want to do a bath because you can't be bothered, which is pretty frequent, to be honest.
I think some people really appreciated you saying that you didn't enjoy a lot of elements of...
No, yes, that was one of the first things we got was people like, oh, I'm glad Nick said he didn't enjoy it. From 6:30 at night, I don't love that last bit.
Yeah.
I usually scurry off into the dishes. I'm like, oh, that's just...
Yeah, well, it's tough, isn't it? Yeah, meal times, bedtimes, toileting, getting ready for school, these are all the pressure points.
Sure are.
The other thing I didn't mention about sleep hygiene, there's a guy called Matthew Walker who's like, once again, one of my North Stars. He's a clinician and researcher that's kind of come into the public sphere a lot about providing good education to families and everyone about sleep. He's got this book called Why We Sleep. And it's an amazing book for people that are interested, but he says if you only remember one thing from the book, he's like, set an alarm for when you go to bed. And his point of that is that it's really important to have consistency to build a strong association with this is the time we go to bed and we do it at the same time every night of the week.
God.
So that's the problem, that sleep hygiene is really hard to do consistently.
Such a routine, is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, well, it's just really important that our kids that are struggling have that good kind of predictability around sleep.
Because you've got to teach them how to sleep, right?
Yeah, it's a skill. Sleep's a skill that I am really poor at as well.
Yeah,
so we might get to talk about that in us as parents as well. But yeah, so if we think about that's the kind of first of the five things.
Okay.
The next thing is what we call stimulus control. What that means is how do we strengthen the association that kids have between the bedroom and sleeping and weaken the association that they have between the bedroom and being awake, alert, aroused.
I'm just thinking about, like, I always play games in the bedroom, even, like, through the middle of the day. Stupid. I won't do that now.
Well, you're interesting because you shifted the kids together, which reminds me, someone said, how do you put kids in the same room?
Someone did ask us that, yeah. Out and out fluke. That just put them in and honestly did it during, like, summer, put the kids in the same room, tried it out, and it had this amazing effect. I had one daughter that would take... She would go to sleep at 8:30, 9 o'clock every night while we put the other one down at 7. So it was like put one down, then put the other one down, put them both in the same room, started going to sleep at 7 together.
Yeah.
And no skill, just let's see how they go in the same room. And it, Bradbury, just bang.
Yeah, it went really well. I remember seeing you the first day that you set it up and coming around and you were kind of like, God, is this going to work? But yeah, so that kind of... stimulus control, what we're trying to say is that this is what happens here and we're trying to reduce it being associated with where a lot of activity and alertness and, you know, big things happen that waken up our brains. And one thing we talked about last time was bedtime fading. That's about that. Remember the one where we're like, wait until they're tired, then they go in, even if it's 2 hours after you'd like them to be going to bed, look for signs, then they go in. And it doesn't matter, and then you bring it forward. So that's the fading bit that you go, cool, you're falling asleep now at 10 p.m., you go in and you fall asleep pretty quickly, then we wind it forward. That's building a really strong association of saying this is where we sleep, and you're kind of trying to match it to their circadian rhythm as well, so knowing that their circadian kicks in when it's dark and all those things, and that's when they go in. The other bit, which is around that, which you talked about last time, is that 20 minutes maximum. Like if they hit 20 minutes and they're still awake, you pull them out.
We had someone that said it took them 90 minutes. Like they asked about that. It's like, hang on, 20 minutes, taking me 90.
Yeah, 90 minutes is really common. 2 hours is really common. Like I've got a lot of families. I've seen a bunch of families in the last week again talking about specific sleep stuff that are like, yep, it's 2 hours. And then every time they wake, it's an hour.
I also had someone say that, like, they have to go to sleep with them. Like, this person had, like, a 7-year-old and they're, like, we're still going to bed with them and waiting for them to fall asleep.
Yeah, so that's an understandable, really strong sleep association from a really caring parent. And if the parent is like, yeah, this is cool, fine.
Yeah, they've flagged it with us. So yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so, yeah, so the bit for them is, like, how can they really gradually reduce the amount of support that they're giving to the point where they're aiming for, and their goal might be, I want to wave goodnight in the living room to this child. They take themselves to bed and fall asleep. The problem is there's nothing that you can do that makes that happen in one step.
Nah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's that gradual support reduction.
Yeah, so we had some families that were telling us about, like, there's a mattress in our room, there's a mattress in their room, all those different things. And those are really good graduated extinction. And what you're extincting, if that's a word, is how much support you're giving. So you're going towards the bit where I'm not going to be a part of this.
That's right. And you were saying practically that's like, so you start in the bed with them, you might.
Yep.
And then you might move to a mattress on the floor, and then you might the next night move the mattress a meter away and move the mattress 2 meters away, then it's out in the hallway.
Yeah, that's
in your bed.
Yeah, exactly. That's camping out. Yeah, the controlled crying or controlled comforting is kind of the one where you do that, but it's time. I don't use that one much. Yep. But what it really is looking at what exactly are you doing now? How can we get to the point where you're not doing something so intensely until they fall asleep and then stopping it? You either stop it sooner or reduce how intensely you're doing that thing.
Yep.
So that you pull it away. And that's kind of that's stimulus control, which has got one of the strongest bits of evidence about kids through their life course, including adolescence. What you do with adolescents is they're the ones that take control of it. With younger kids, the parents step in and control that. So that's first bit, sleep hygiene. Second bit, stimulus control. The third one is called sleep restriction. And it's a really interesting one where what you're trying to say is that you're in this room just to sleep.
Mm.
Now, the way that works is say the child goes in to the room and they spend 10 hours in there. But they only sleep for 7 hours.
Yeah.
They're only in there for 7 hours. And you pull them out. You go, that's it. That's the 7 hours. Now, what they will develop very quickly, because they'll be tired, is they go in there and sleep for 7 hours. Now, they actually need 9 hours. So once they're successfully going in there and spending all of their time, or some people say 85, 90% of their time in the room asleep, you then over a week extend it by 15, 30-minute increments. Does that make sense?
No. Because if they're not asleep, are you still pulling them out?
Doesn't matter if they sleep or not. Once you've instigated it, you go, cool, I've watched you for a week, I've watched you for 2 weeks. You're in there for 10 hours, but you only sleep for 7. So now it's 7 hours in there.
Okay.
Very quickly, they'll be tired. And those 7 hours will be 7 hours of sleeping, and then you stretch it.
Then those 7 become 7:15.
Yep, 7:30.
Yep,
gets to 8, gets to 9. Now you sometimes have to go back because they wake through the night. This is a very good strategy for kids that wake through the night.
How do you get them back to sleep?
So, well, this is the overarching strategy: is you then shorten it again.
Ah, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, take it back. So they got up to 8.5 hours, but you take it back to 8. But I noticed
you were waking up through the night and coming out. So what I actually think is that we need to go back now to 7.5. And what you're doing is building a really strong association. The interesting thing with kids that wake up through the night is every single kid wakes up through the night. They all wake up multiple times, you and I do. People that sleep really well aren't really aware of it. People like me that sleep really poorly, I'm aware of every single time that I wake up because we link cycles. So one of the really important skills with sleep is not just being able to fall asleep and self-soothe, it's being able to link cycles back together. And we would cycle like kids have shorter cycles, adults have longer cycles, but 40 to 90 minutes. You go light sleep, deep sleep, light sleep. Often you come out of light sleep and you're awake. And what we're trying to do is teach kids self-soothing so that they link back. The amazing thing is that people will say, nah, my kid wakes up heaps more than the average kid. But when we actually look with like infrared cameras in kids' rooms and stuff like that, or we put some motion monitors, things like that, the parents that say, nah, my kid doesn't wake up, those kids wake up just as much as the kids where parents are like, nah, my kid wakes up heaps. It's just that the kids that are pretty good at self-soothing, don't have an impact on the family functioning. So no one's really aware because they wake up, sit, look around, bang, they're back off. We'll get to some more helpful strategies on the fifth step about how to do that, or the fifth component. But does that make sense? Like that's
that, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's sleep.
And I've seen like evidence of that. Like you walk in at the end of the night just to check the kids and sometimes they're like awake and you're just like, oh shit, and you run out.
Yeah.
You're like, God, what the hell was that? You're like, you look at your partner, like, I don't know, the kid was awake.
Yeah, well that's really interesting because often like I've got a lower threshold for going into Evie when she's making noises and stuff, and Annalise is like, give her a minute. You know, and not even crying, but just she'll be making noises and stuff. And she's awake because I know there's like an intention to the sound she's making and stuff and the movement she's doing. But then, you know, Annalise is right. You give her a couple of minutes and she's back down again and back asleep. So she's linking her cycles. But unless your kid is waking up every, you know, hour, they are linking cycles. Even if they're waking up three times a night, they are still linking cycles. They're just not linking all of them. The fourth bit is mindfulness and relaxation.
Ooh.
So, yeah, it's an area where there's a lot of maybe charlatans is the wrong word.
but we'll use it anyway.
Yeah. It's like 100 years old, that word. Do you know 100 years ago in populations all through the world, especially Western cultures, everyone was sleeping an hour longer a night?
God.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh.
And you think 100 years is a long time ago. But that Charlie Chaplin movie that I talked about last week.
Look at you.
The kid. Yes. 100 years old.
1922.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing? So people were, Isn't that amazing that we were sleeping? Yeah, so really good question. So lots of different reasons. One of them is artificial light is such a bigger part of our lives. So we kind of, you know, we have this false light. So we fit more into the day. You know, a lot of people would say we live busier lives outside of set hours. Kind of the agricultural society has changed from one to where a lot of people are working a lot more.
Till it's dark.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different things. But, yeah, it's really interesting to think about that.
Less video on demand, less binge watching.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Seriously. It's,
yeah. Yeah, they didn't have Adam Sandler movies back then.
No, Friday Night Footy didn't exist.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff. Okay, I get it.
Yeah, so yeah, it's really interesting. But do you have a good understanding of what mindfulness is?
Yeah, I like mindfulness. God, I suck at it a lot sometimes, but yeah.
Well, it's funny because your house numbers thing last week is kind of a form of mindfulness.
Yeah, I'm good at trying to numb the brain.
Yeah, so it's really funny that you say that because I think, including me, a lot of us that sleep poorly use things like alcohol to try and kind of numb our brain. Like I do it as like a relaxation thing to switch off.
Yeah.
The problem is those things, they're really so alcohol, for example, is really unhelpful for anyone that's got teenagers that are kind of, you know, drinking alcohol and then struggling to sleep, is it can help you fall asleep. But it doesn't help you stay asleep. And often when the effects worn off, you wake up and it actually makes your night sleep worse.
Way worse.
Yeah. Everyone kind of knows
midweek,
that.
Red wine midweek is a disaster for me.
Yeah, in quality. But mindfulness is a bit better than that because what mindfulness really is it's an awareness that you get from paying attention to the present moment, but non-judgmentally.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what a lot of people do is they stress about sleeping and they're like, oh, God, I've got to get to sleep. Oh, my God, if I don't sleep now, I'm only going to get...
It's the worst. You know,
yeah.
And it's 4:30. God, I'm only going to get an hour and a half more.
Yeah, so they'll really stress about it. And it's really funny. There's evidence that if you have two groups of people and one group you put in the room a clock, a digital clock with the time, and then the other group you put in exactly the same thing but it just flashes random numbers... there is really significant difference and the people with the actual clock take much longer to fall asleep than the people with the box that just randomly flashes digital numbers because there's that psychological component. Whereas what mindfulness does is it's really kind of an acceptance of what's happening in the present moment. And a lot of kids who struggle to sleep, especially adolescents, will have anxiety. And when they're in that moment, they really struggle with that. So they kind of get there and go, you know, God, I'm really kind of... stressed about this thing that's happening tomorrow or whatever. What mindfulness tries to teach them is like paying attention to the present moment so that you're not kind of occupied by other stuff and it's stressing you out and all of those things. There's really good evidence if you know how to do mindfulness properly, it can be really helpful for falling and staying asleep. And what we can do with kids that when it's developmentally appropriate and you can increase the complexity of it as they get more developmentally advanced is actually role model and teach them mindfulness.
When?
Well, from any age, really, whether you can use language and follow instructions. I spoke with an educator today about she does mindfulness with kids in her classroom when they have externalizing behaviors. And what she does is she brings them out of the classroom and she gets them to copy her and clench their fists and then let their fists out and describe what it feels like. And that's a form of mindfulness. And that's really good because it's helping that child learn a strategy that's really appropriate. You might have heard of body scans. Have you heard of doing a body scan?
Oh, yeah, where you think about your toes and feel your toes.
Yeah, and what does it feel like and is it heavy and all those things and you go through it. And we can actually talk to our kids about that and doing it. Adolescents, we give it to them and say, this is what it is, you try it.
Sorry, just practically though, like not so much when do we do it age-wise, but do you do it before bed or
we can do it as part of the bedtime routine. You can be like, cool, we sit here for 90 minutes. Why don't we just try this thing together? And diaphragmatic breathing is another one where you're kind of really focusing on your breath and counting numbers of breathing out, hold it for numbers, count in. All those things are really helpful as like strategies to teach kids and role model so that then they have a really good component of a strategy for falling asleep but also when they wake up. And what you would do is the kid who's waking up through the night and coming to you, you can go back to them and then say, look, what's going to go back in the room and we're going to do a body scan together.
Yep.
You know, or whatever it is. And what you're doing is giving them an opportunity to further develop that skill. But it has to be a part of the start of the night as well.
It's got to be part of the start of the night because doing it when you've got another kid in the same rooms.
Exactly. So what you want to do is like, cool, teach let's the just
skill.
Try it.
Give them
so
the skill.
Teach the skill. And they won't learn it quickly. But if you can build mindfulness into a strategy that kids have, they'll be doing better than most of us adults.
100%. No, that's a good one. I like that one.
So, yeah, that's kind of one. And this is solid evidence. This isn't like my opinion. This is like thousands of kids have gone through trials of what this looks like and including adolescents. It is an evidence-based strategy that improves sleep quality and duration. Even things like daytime functioning. If you do these things with adolescents that have anxiety and depression, their anxiety and depression gets better.
Okay.
Like they function better in those kind of symptoms. The last one, last of the five, so we've done sleep hygiene, we've done stimulus control, we've done sleep restriction, and we just did mindfulness and relaxation. The last one's behavior change, which is something I'm really, really interested in, which is like, it's really easy to go, cool, I should sleep more.
Yeah.
But how do you actually motivate people to do that?
Yeah.
And what's really important is we understand what your and my motivation is for our kids to sleep better, but what's actually their motivation? And we probably don't think about that a lot.
What would their motivation be?
Well, you can ask them and say, you know, what would be better if you slept for longer? And they're probably like, nothing, because I don't want to sleep for longer. But then you can build a narrative that is, you know, you'll wake up really refreshed and you and I will be able to go and do that thing because we'll get ready for school really quickly and we'll be able to do that thing first and let's just try and see how it goes. And you set some achievable targets and you build a motivation for them and say, if we can do it like this and we can, you know, do the bedtime in three steps and then go through, and if they're at the point, you go, and if you can go through the night and sleep and then wake up and jump out of bed, we'll go and do this fun thing before school. And you don't use it as a punishment if they don't do it, but you build it as like an opportunity when we've succeeded. But you've just got to make the stretch achievable. So you can't be like, I want it to be a perfect night. I don't want you to need any support at all. See you later. And if you wake up in the morning, you know.
Okay. So you don't do this like as they're lying in bed. You do it before the podcast.
No, it's the same as the mindfulness stuff. It's the same as everything, especially kids that are in late primary school and high school. When you're all sitting down and have got some space, you build the plan together.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Because you can't, otherwise I get too excited. You're going to, what I'm thinking is if like you're sitting in bed and go, oh, we're going to do this, they'll be like, oh, I'm never going to sleep. This is too exciting.
No, so build it during the day.
Gotcha.
And they've got an input in it and they, you know, and then you reinforce the plan when you see it, but you don't punish the plan when it doesn't happen.
Yeah, okay.
If you're running for 2 weeks and you see nothing to reinforce, you're stretching them too much. You've got to drop it back. That kind of is a really big part of CBT as a whole as well, which is cognitive restructuring. We know there's a lot of negative thinking from us as parents, but also kids around sleep. You sit there and stress, oh my God, if I don't sleep tonight, if I don't fall asleep now, tomorrow's going to be a nightmare and I won't be able to do this because I'll be really stressed. Oh, if these kids are never going to sleep, I'm never going to get time with my partner in the evenings again. I had one family this week that were really stressed and I was like, I wonder why, you know, there's something I'm missing here. And finally, the dad was like, yeah, I've got a lot of mental health issues. And one of the first things that came through for me was I had really poor sleep as a young kid. And I think that has really made my life really difficult. And I'm worried that's going on in his daughter. His daughter's six and, you know, isn't sleeping great, but all stuff we can work on. So there's a lot of kind of dysfunctional thinking around sleep. It's a lot of unrealistic expectations. You know, kids are often going to need support and that's okay. But that kind of real behavior change is like, how do we bring in functioning that's more helpful? And in the same way that like lying there as adults, you know, thinking this is really bad and stressing about sleep, trying to say, I'll just try and relax and wait for sleep to come. Sleep's this funny thing that we kind of, you know, we don't try and get hungry, but we try and get tired, whereas tiredness will come.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. If say one of your daughters is refusing to go to bed, she will eventually get tired, won't she?
Yeah, I hope.
Yes. Well, she definitely will. Do you know what I mean? Of course she will. So you've got to try and pull the pressure out of it and say like, well, she normally goes to bed now, but she's kicking up such a fuss. She's getting really stressed. I think we had one parent that was like, you know, the moment we say it's time to brush your teeth, we've got a beautiful routine, a really good setup. The moment we get to that step, really upset and stressed, and it becomes a nightmare.
Yep.
And I would say, like, back right off. Just back right off, because that child is eventually going to get tired, and then you get an opportunity to build a positive association. Do you know what I mean? It just might not look exactly what you want it to look like.
Yeah. That's like with a lot of the stuff though, right?
Yeah.
Like it's never.
Yeah. So kind of dropping that expectation that we have. And then I guess one of the other things that's really helpful that's specific about kids that wake up is, have you ever heard of kind of bedtime passes?
No, what are they?
So people will say like you get one or two bedtime passes. And once again, you don't decide in the moment at 2 a.m. But you kind of sit down with the child during the day and say, cool, you're going to get a bedtime pass every night. You can use the bedtime pass to come and tell me something, get a drink of water, go to the toilet or whatever. And then they give you the pass when they do it.
Okay.
You go, cool. Yep. You want to tell me like what happened today at school or whatever, even though you're kind of like, no, you're just trying to push the limits a bit. But they give you the pass. And then you go, awesome. You go, ah, it's cool. We've used the pass. And it's a limit setting technique. So you go, we've used the pass. You've told me that you used it for a drink of water, you used it to go to the bathroom, whatever thing they were trying to just kind of stretch with. And I remember doing that as a kid. But it's a really good way to, and then you reinforce it. You go, you were amazing last night. Because you used the pass and then you stayed in your room.
Oh.
So, yeah, really positive reinforcing specific strategy about kids that wake up through the night.
Ah, so that actually brings me to one personal one.
Okay.
I get yelled for at all times of night. And I'm like, God, what's going on? Like, Dad, 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 Dad. And it's so loud and I'm worried one kid's going to wake the other one.
This is your 4-year-old?
Yeah.
Gorgeous, ready.
Walk in. I go, what? So I can't find my bunny. I'm like, here's your bunny. What do I do about that?
Why do you reckon she's doing it?
She's lost her bunny.
Do you think that's why?
Yeah. Why? What is it?
Oh, she probably, it'd be probably pretty fun to see it 2 a.m. as well.
Not at my best. Yeah. Okay, so she wants me to come in. God.
She wants you, she's kind of woken up and she's probably had, you know, a more heightened kind of awakening where she's not just able to link back into the next one.
Yep.
She probably does want a bunny as well.
Mm.
But she probably also, you know, wants some support from you to see you, all those things. Okay. And so what you've got to try and do. See, the problem is, like we talked about last time, I think, whenever we talked about kind of negative coercion cycles, if she shouts out and everything, and then she's like, I don't want to be on my own here. I want you to come. And you're like, I don't want her to keep shouting. So you go in what you're both learning is you get what you want by her shouting and then you going in.
I sometimes shout back.
Do you?
And it sometimes works.
Yeah, definitely.
Sleepy time. And she goes,
and that's it. Yeah, so and that's we've had a lot of families kind of sending in, this is what we're doing. We're sleeping in their room. They're sleeping in our room. Mm. We're doing all these things. Mm. What you want to see is like, how can I gently reduce how much I'm doing? And that's actually what you're doing, because you're getting to the point where Freddie doesn't need you to come in, but she just needs some connection with you. And verbally is enough, and then she falls back asleep. Mm. So what you want to get her to the next bit is like, how can she – the next big step for her overnight with the bunny is that she doesn't call out.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, so build that into it though. So at the start of the night or during the day or something, say, hey, this is where the bunny lives. Like you can reach him from the side of your bed.
Okay.
And then when she calls out, you say, yeah, he's next to the bed. And then, you know, then she gets the bunny and you don't hear again. The next morning you go, you are a superstar. That was amazing. Like you called out once and then you found him. And then you go, tonight, see if you can find him before calling out. And you don't kind of, once again, she will get to the point, though, I promise you, where she will find it and not call out.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah, but and then you reinforce it. And then she might slip back and the next night she might call, but that's fine. Just really specific, realistic, achievable stuff. And then reinforce it.
I like those.
So, yeah, hopefully some helpful stuff. But the really solid evidence, the last thing about kids that wake up through the night is, you know, the start of the night is still where all the money's at.
Sure.
The sleep hygiene stuff alone, all the sleep hygiene stuff we talked about this time and last time, which all kind of happens at the start of the night, if you do that effectively, it reduces the frequency of nighttime awakenings.
I'm sold. You got to get them down to start with.
Yeah, definitely. But then those are some specific things you can do for when they wake up. We talk about the bedtime passes and mindfulness and kind of taking them out of the room and all that stuff. But, yeah, hopefully that answers a lot of those questions, because it was amazing to get so many questions that were similar.
Yep. One question I don't think we covered actually, separate, melatonin?
Yeah, so we get asked a lot about melatonin.
We talked about drugs at one stage in there, but melatonin specifically, people were like, oh, two people asked about it.
Yeah, so melatonin is this kind of natural hormone that I'm pretty sure your pineal gland secretes, and it increases when you, your melatonin goes up in darkness and down in daylight.
Okay.
So does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it's kind of one of the triggers that we talked about with kind of circadian rhythm. And then the sleep debt stuff is another thing called adenosine. And adenosine is what builds up and makes us get to the point where we need sleep, whatever. Yeah, so melatonin is a naturally occurring thing that we've been able to synthetically produce so that kids can take it. The couple of things that are really important about melatonin is that it only helps, if it ever does anything, it only helps you fall asleep. So it doesn't help you stay asleep at all.
Right, just gets you. Yeah, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So Matthew Walker, the guy that I was talking about earlier, wrote the book Why We Sleep. He talks about melatonin is like the starting gun of the race. So it just says the race of sleep, bang, and it shoots the gun. Like kids, adults can ignore it and just go, you know what, I'm not running. I don't care about the gun went off. Especially kids that are taking melatonin and sitting on an iPad. I say to families, like, you may as well just tip the melatonin down the sink, because there's a lot of people that will say, no, it definitely works. But the most powerful thing that we have in medicine is the placebo effect, which is just that if it was a sugar pill, you'd be like, I need the sugar pill. Because the amazing thing about a placebo is that it's a real effect. It's not a fake thing. It just sets you up psychologically to be like, this is going to be better. My anxiety 100%. Will be better. I'll get sleepy.
100%.
Whatever it is. Because when we test a lot of those things, it doesn't actually help. And especially melatonin is not helpful through the night.
Yep.
So the kids that fall asleep, okay, but wake up through the night, doesn't help. Most of the evidence for melatonin is in kids that have neurological reasons why they won't get a good circadian rhythm. For example, kids who are blind. They don't get the natural, you know, daylight and then darkness to help get the rhythm. So that's why melatonin is really helpful for them. Kids who have like really severe neurodisability, like severe autism, they will also have differences in their surging of melatonin. So they will really benefit from it. There is some evidence that kind of it is helpful in other kids. And I've taken it before when I used to do night shifts because I'd get up in the morning, I'd ride home, daylight's bright, buzzing, birds are singing, you know, world's a good place and happy and everyone's getting ready for work and I'm then trying to sleep. It just made me pretty groggy as well. So that's the downside of it. The other big downside of melatonin is that it, when you look in preparations kind of at a lot of different places, so some pharmacies are really good, but there's a really big variation in what how much they say is in each pill or each 5 mils and how much is actually in there.
Okay.
So you've got to be really careful with it because sometimes it's like 10% of what's meant to be in there. Sometimes it's like 400%.
Oh,
of what's meant to be in there. So, yeah. And we also don't have really good long-term studies of the effect. It seems pretty harmless, but we haven't followed kids for decades taking it because it's relatively new in the space of what's going on. So it's a bit of like a quick fix for kids falling asleep, but I would say all the stuff we've talked about is more valuable. But then I understand that there's a lot of families that are like, nah.
Just need a circuit breaker.
Yep, the melatonin, you know, that's the thing that gets us through. And I don't care if it's, to be honest, I don't care if it's a purple crystal under the pillow that is the thing that works.
Does that work?
Unfortunately, no. But you just need to be able to say.
Placebo.
Yeah, the purple crystal works. You know, there's a lot of people doing stuff where I'm like, cool, does that help? And they're like, I'm not really sure, actually. And I'm like, yeah, cool, that's probably not. You know, let's try something different then. So, yeah, that's kind of, yeah, melatonin. I actually thought we'd get a lot more questions about medication, but I'm going to stay in the lane of what we got asked about.
Yeah.
And I suspect we'll have to do future ones on the sleep. There's a whole heap of sleep stuff we could do about. We got one person asking about ADHD and sleep, really big association with that. There's a really big kind of not misdiagnosis, but if you get kids to sleep, their ADHD gets better, their anxiety gets better. Up to 80% of kids that have anxiety, ADHD, autism, they will have problems with sleep. And if you can improve their sleep, their functioning is almost guaranteed to get better.
Yeah.
It's just that this stuff's really hard.
Really hard. Wow. Awesome.
Yeah, so deeper dive. But deeper hopefully, dive. Hopefully yes. One that's helpful.
Nah, super helpful. I'm sure all the people that ask all their questions, I'm certain that you've probably picked it up, so that's good. But that does bring us to the end of episode 20.
Yes.
Might just add 20. God.
Yeah.
Did you think we'd get here?
Yeah, well, I wasn't sure we'd get to 10. Once we got to 10, we had a bit of momentum and people seem to be enjoying it.
Don't take into account the pilots. We did do a couple of pilots.
Yeah, we've still got that footage, which would be quite funny to look at.
Footage would be funny. The recording off a phone would be even more funny.
Well, this is still a phone. People can't tell, but it was the audio, you mean, yes.
The audio.
Yes.
Sometimes we forgot to hit record. One of us did.
Yeah, we're a team, so no blaming.
We don't point fingers.
And do we want to do any shout-outs? Shout out for, still not 100% sure what the next topic's going to be, but it's heavy. So if anyone's got any last minute requests.
I've got one. I don't really want to say what it is.
Okay. Well, let's just throw it out there if anyone wants to send help in what they want.
Yep. Yep. Via the DMs is the best way to get us, via Instagram, or via popcultureparenting@gmail.com. You can still shape this next episode, definitely what we do, but also ones after that, we start banking them. But yeah, we try and just get as many people on the same page and we go, yep, time to do that one.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, cool. And then, yeah, there's some exciting stuff on the horizon, but maybe we'll save it.
Oh, don't. Paul. Hey.
Yeah, okay.
Just don't do that. Okay. I love doing that because it commits me to doing it. I know what you're on about.
Hey, mate, we've been knocking it out of the park. But yeah, just exciting stuff to get to more people.
Yes. Exciting stuff. Thank you, Billy.
Thanks, Nick.
Hey, don't let your mother smell that beer on your breath. She'll take it out on me.
Daddy, and what does he do?
trust use your best judgment. We trust you.